Rosh Chodesh edition. It's a little bit late, so I'll have very, very brief. Number one, we'll talk about three ideas, but very briefly, rather than the normal elaborate discussion. The Plishtim closed the waterways and the wells that Avram had dug, that Yitzchak was busy digging. Sitmum Plishtim. So Rashi quotes the Medrash, because they said, these water wells that you're digging, they're going to be perilous for us because our enemies will invade us to steal those waterways. Takala heim lanu mehagaya sos habaos aleinu. Waterways were very precious, so armies would invade. So they were angry at Yitzchak that you're imperiling us by exposing us to attack from our enemies by creating waterways. This is a very, very odd logic. So therefore we're going to shoot ourselves in the leg and not have water, because water is so valuable, and it's too valuable for us because we're going to invite our enemies to attack. Let's just starve to death. It's a little bit backwards thinking, right? If you want water, you need water. If it's something that other people are going to attack you for, then it's probably very valuable you need in the first place. What's behind the scenes? If you look at the pasuk before, Vayikanubo, they were jealous of Yitzchak. So when you're jealous, your mind plays tricks on you. And Hakina va'ataiva va'kava motzinis adam min olam, it ruins your logic. So here, it's a self-inflicted harm. They're shooting themselves in the legs because they're so jealous of someone. When you're jealous, you'll do anything to solve your jealousy, even inflicting harm upon yourself. So just be careful when you're jealous to stop, pump the brakes a little bit, try to climb out of jealousy. And especially, there's another narrative to this. It's not just jealousy, but it's hostility toward Yitzchak, who wants to settle land in Israel. Anytime Jews want to settle land in Israel, there's always going to be hostility and opposition, even if it's irrational. It reminds me of the good people in Cape Town who are struggling with, I don't mean the Jewish people specifically, but the city of Cape Town, who has been struggling with water and water acquisition over the last 10 years or so. And Israel has water technology that can help them conserve water and produce water for their starving population. People don't have enough water, but they refuse to accept Israel technology because we're running an apartheid state and we're killing babies, and patterns in history return and recycle. So the same Plishtim, these are the Plishtim, the modern day Plishtim. We don't want your water because we're jealous of you, because we're angry about Jewish history, and we can help you, let us help you. But sometimes they don't let us help them. Okay, another Rashi. Yitzchak speaks euphemistically to Esav. He tells Esav, I'll tell you what he says, and I'll tell you how he says it. What he tells Esav is, take out your knife, take out your machete, take out your sword, sharpen it, and go kill me a deer. Go get me some deer. I'm hungry. I'm hungry. Heavily tzayit. But he doesn't talk in that language. He says, Ve'ata sana kelecha. Take your tools. Okay, what tools? Power drill? Screwdriver? Take your tools. Your pincetta, your tweezers. What tools does he mean? A little more specific. Telyecha. What does telyecha mean? Taf lamed yud chaf. So Rashi says, telyecha is actually a sword. Why is it a sword? Because you hang it up. Every sword has a handle. You hang it up. When you come in, you take off your coat, you hang it up. I'm home, honey. Here's my sword. Hang up the sword. Those days, of course. So he calls a sword a telyecha. Okay? And he tells him, sana. Take it? Of course you're going to take it. What does sana mean? So Rashi says, sana means lashon hashchaza. Sharpen it. And Rashi brings a proof from a Gemara in Beitza that uses the word Messian, sounds like sana to sharpen. What in the world is happening here? Why don't you say what's on your mind? Take your sword, sharpen it, and go. Why is he speaking roundabout euphemistically? The answer is that Yitzchak saw something in Esav. Whatever it is right now is not important. A million different ways to explain the parsha. What was Yitzchak's grand plan? Why do you want Esav to receive the brachas? But one thing he knew his son was a rough, brutish, aggressive, violent hunter. You have to be. Hunting in those days wasn't setting a trap. Hunting was going to killing a bear, sticking it in the neck. It was bloody and gory and aggressive and maybe even wily and cunning. That's why he wanted Esav, Rav Amital said. That's why Esav's head was in the Moshe of Machpelah, because it had a cunningness that could be important in learning Torah. You have to be audacious. You have to think beyond the box. Whatever he saw, but he knows who his son is. And he's trying to change him. He's trying to make him a little softer. So instead of speaking in gory, violent terms, take your sword and sharpen your sword and go cut. Take your tools and see if you can carry your tools and bring me some food. Because it's not an all-or-nothing proposition. People can grow, people can change. And Yitzchak knows the ways of his. And he wants to make him a softer person. So the answer for us non-Esavs is try to become a softer person. Watch the language you use. Not in terms of your swords. I don't think anyone's carrying swords. But the language you use determines the traits you'll adopt. And if Yitzchak is speaking euphemistic language about swords, not to make it gory and violent, It's because he wants Esav to be a little bit softer, even though he's a hunter and he's a trapper, but he wants him to receive the brachas for whatever reason, but he knows who Esav is, so he's not saying swords and sharpening. Okay, one other interesting Rashi. I don't know where this is heading yet. We don't have that much time to fully elaborate it, but it fascinates me. So Rivka tells Yitzchak, Yaakov, here come. Esav's away now. Take two goats and kachli. What does that mean, kachli? Lechel atzon, kachli misham, shnei gidoye izim. Not taken for me, taken for yourself. Taken for yourself, it's kachli. So Rashi says, no, she was telling Yaakov, this is not theft, because I have the right to two goats per day. Rashi says, mishalihem. The Enam Gezel, because Yitzchak himself was careful about Gezel, he told Esav, don't take from Hefker. So obviously there's a Gezel factor that worries both parents. These are mine. Enam Gezel, shekach kasev la Yitzchak b'ksuvasa. Yitzchak wrote a ksuva to Rivka, litol shnei gedoye isim b'chol yom. Each day you have a right to two goats. Impressive, right? Very rich, very wealthy, very generous of Yitzchak. Something's off here. Is that the way you'd want your family to run? That your wife gets to take two barrels of wheat every day because it's contractually consigned to her and secured to her and guaranteed to her? Like, you're supposed to love each other and share your resources and not. And when you think about the contrast between this moment of preparing food, what does this sound like? Where else in Sefer Bereishis have we seen this story before, but it's a lot smoother? Avram. When Avram comes to the tank, I feel there's a lot of parallel between Vayera and Toldos. Mari, Shlosim, Kemach, Selos, Lushiv, everyone's together. Everyone's saying, oh, this is mine. You take what you're entitled to. I take what I'm entitled to. Can I borrow some of yours? Like, you know, my wife's saying, can I take a loan out for my wife? I know you have some money. I need to buy some Shabbos clothing. Can I borrow? I'll pay back. Here are some Edim. It sounds as if Yitzchak and Rivka's relationship was very, very different and less, I won't say harmonious, but less smooth. And the Tziv has a whole thesis about this, that they didn't have good communication, and that's why they misread one each other's view on their children, and that's why when Rivka sees Yitzchak, she falls off. It's a relationship of admiration rather than a relationship of equality and parity. And Hashem wanted it this way for all sorts of reasons. But it highlights two things. First of all, try to marry someone that's like you. Okay, you have to find people that are on the same cultural wavelength as yourself. Because if not, there'll be so many differences, it's hard to create common frequency. Yitzchak and Rivka came from different worlds. Yitzchak came from the world of Avram, Rivka came from the world of Esau and Lavan. He was a Tzaddik ben Tzaddik, she was a Tzaddik bas Rasha. So as much as she was a pious person, their worlds were just so different. And it's hard to combine those two worlds. The second is when you marry, try to create a relationship of parity. Don't neither should admire the other. Obviously you want someone that admires you, you admire her, but somehow in this relationship, there's always a hierarchy. She sees Yitzchak, and she falls off the camel, and she's so impressed with him. It's important to find someone and to marry someone that's your colleague, not your student, or not even your colleague, even your companion. Someone that you have that equal respect and equal affirmation for. Sometimes you have marriages in which one person, you know, it feels insecure or inferior to the other, and the person feels superior or feels very comfortable in it because he's looked up to, she's looked. Those disparities are not healthy. Marriages that last are based on parity and common respect and everyone being a partner, especially in our day with us. So it's interesting to think, to see this little scene and to see Rivka saying, oh, don't worry, here's my contract. You can take two goats because I got the contract. I got the star here at the Edom. And he's like, can't prevent you. That's not how we would expect this marriage to be conducted. That's not how Avraham and Sarah conducted that marriage. The Tziv talks about it. What was the reason? It's interesting to speculate, but it is Rosh Chodesh. You guys have to go.